I'm Dirk Richardson, and in the studio tonight is Steve Horowitz.
Hello, Dirk. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome back, belatedly, to the Bay Area.
Thank you. Well, it hasn't been that long, so it's still perfectly valid.
Yeah, but we've run into each other a few times, so.
That's true.
Yeah. But here's your official KPFA welcome back to the Bay Area.
Thank you. That's very special. Do I get anything with that? A badge or a... Does it come with...
Don't press your luck.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
But it's been a while since you've been in the studio.
It has been. We were talking about that. I think the last time I was here was when the second Code record came out and we were on Carl Stone's show.
That was a while ago.
That was a long time ago when I was a brash young man.
If the first Code record came out in, what, 91?
Oh, no, I think it's like 93.
93?
Yeah, so it would have been 94.
Yeah.
I think. I got it right here. I could look at the date.
Wow.
We wrote dates on it and stuff. Of course, I need... Oh, 94. There you go.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
But it seems like yesterday.
Some ways it does. So, you disappeared from the Bay Area for a while.
I did. I was back, you know. I came back from time to time for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I haven't lived here since 1996.
And what took you away?
What took me away? Interesting. My wife, Keisha, is a painter, and she decided she had painted her whole life, but she never went to school. So she decided she wanted to go back to school and study painting. And I had a friend, a Dutch friend, who was telling her about the Hogeschool voor Kunst, the art school in Holland, and in the Netherlands. And I had been studying at that time with Stephen Lucky Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
At CalArts. I had come back to the Bay Area from studying with Lucky, and he always told me, man, they're just great. If you ever get a chance to go to Holland, you should go there. They're really nice to composers. So I had it in my mind, and so it all came together, and we pulled up stakes in 96 and decided we were going to go for a year. And ended up staying for almost four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. And it was very nice.
Was it everything they had made it out to be?
Yeah, maybe and more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, it's a wonderful country, great place to live. We made amazing friends. I did two or three tours there and other parts, and it was a great place to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, before you left, and we're going to do a survey of your music, and you're just going to hand me stuff, and we're going to play as much as we can.
And then at the end, I get my Lifetime Achievement Award, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it.
So yeah. we'll take some twists and turns along the way, because I'll play, I think, other than playing, you know, just my own, selfishly, my own music, we can also play stuff from Supersize Me,
mm-hmm.
Music I did for that film, and for the title track I did for Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some stuff along the way that we can do. So I brought a bunch of things. You know, I've also been doing a fair amount of music for television and games
yeah.
in between, so we can play some of that.
Sega, where it leads. Sony, and Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon and Spike TV and
yeah.
all sorts of stuff like that. So, I mean, it's been a journey. Because, you know, 4 years in the Netherlands, and then we moved back to the States, but we moved back to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 years in Manhattan. And you know what that can do to you.
The evidence is before me.
Absolutely. It's a good and a bad thing.
And we should also mention early on that you're reuniting in a way with some old colleagues
yes,
from the Bay Area for
absolutely.
A September 23rd John Coltrane birthday tribute.
Absolutely. We were outside the Ivy Room a couple of Monday nights ago, and Dan Plonzi was there, and my buddy Bernard Meisler, who runs a great literary magazine called Sensitive Skin Magazine. You can just go to sensitiveskin.com. And We were sitting outside, and I don't know why, but Bernard's like, you know, the 23rd is Coltrane's birthday and Bruce Springsteen's birthday. And then I think it was probably me who said, that's great. We should do a show where we feature Coltrane and Bruce Springsteen. And Dan said, yeah, we should do a show where we feature Coltrane. And I think I was still trying to get us to merge the worlds together for a while there, being the hype meister that I am. I thought that would be good. You know, what could be better than Train and the Boss, you know, together at last. But
yeah, I mean, if only Train had lived long enough to actually play next to the big man.
Right? He could have replaced Clarence Clemens,
yeah.
right? I mean, you know, in that whole thing. oh, wow. That's a strange image.
Yeah.
And also a strange juxtaposition of time, right? I mean, like a time warp situation. But anyway, long story short, we pulled together a show for Coltrane's birthday. Somehow the Bruce got lost along the way, sadly.
He was busy.
There'll still be many people who are celebrated on that day. I think on the press release Bernard had, it was also Nixon's checkers speech. It's the anniversary of that. So there could be many anniversaries and birthdays celebrated on that day. But we're at the Luggage Store Gallery, Thursday night the 23rd. It's going to be myself and Dan, Jim Bovey playing drums, and Vinnie Goli is coming up from L.A.
Fantastic.
Should be wonderful. Really looking forward to it. We rehearsed and started to go through train last night, and I've been, you know, I love train, a total master. Just, I went to Berkeley High, so I mean, how can I not? I mean, Coltrane was my total idol, musically, in a lot of ways, and I thought, train, I've been there, you know, I've done this, I know what to do, and I started searching on YouTube, as people are prone to do these days. And I was just blown away. There were just things up there. I mean, I'm like, wow, I never knew he did this album with Pharoah Sanders and all this material. So it's been really nice kind of going back and with my age-addled brain filling in the gaps, you know, of stuff that I thought I knew and things he had done. So we're going to be doing some of Dan's pieces, which are always amazing and wonderful, that are inspired by Train, and we'll be taking bits and pieces of his music and rearranging it and doing our own thing with it and doing some stuff just straight up. And I should also mention that since Sensitive Skin's a literary magazine, there're going to be readings that night, and so there'll be performances, literary readings and music, and should be good.
Yeah.
Should be good.
Yeah. Well, folks, stick around, and later tonight we'll give away some tickets.
Cool.
Okay. So the code.
The code.
The code. The band that you had here in the Bay Area before you left.
That's right. That I still have now.
And who was and who is in it?
Wow. Okay, so Jim Bovey's actually the drummer on this, and you're going to hear Steve Kirk on guitar. You're going to hear myself playing bass. You might hear Nick Phelps on saxophone. And some other people who I... Oh, Sten Rudstrom, who's mm-hmm. doing the vocals. Sten, an amazing performance artist who also left the Bay Area. He lived here, I'm not sure exactly when he left, probably 98, 99, and moved to Germany, and actually has been an amazing, thriving career doing really abstract performance art in Germany. So that's who you're going to hear. This was the first release.
The Code and Oh Chicken. Here on KPFA with my guest, Steve Horowitz. That was beautiful, but that wasn't it. You didn't tell us there was going to be beautiful piano on that, Steve.
Well, you know, I'm nothing if not filled with surprises.
Oh, chicken. I need a fishbowl and a fountain pen.
Wait a minute. That was awfully unsporting of me. When you wasn't looking.
Folks, a complete line of shoes, fruit, shotguns, floats, dresses, gladles, hoidles, cloths, socks, bagels, and lots. And a pickle for a nickel with a mustard on top.
A miracle of heaven, thunder of clouds. I write you love notes in the bones of white paper. The floor shakes, stars drop my shoes on the ground. I wanna fly to shooting star in your Sheila. The first star charts her nipples like solar flares. She and I are astro-projecting bodies, satellites, deep-dish cavities.
Blow the house down, blow the house down.
White billowy sheets of love.
Blow the house down, blow the house down.
Interplanetary. Northern lights across Alaskan skies. She's my jet pilot, my fighter plane. And when she dives, all those missiles and bombs go shooting.
Blow the house down, blow the house down.
of love.
Blow the house down, blow the house down.
Interplanetary.
Blow the house down, blow the house down.
White billowy sheets of love.
Tear the walls up, tear the walls up.
Interplanetary.
Yes, I forgot how much fun that music is.
I had a lot of fun, too, making it and playing it, editing it. Yeah,
the code.
Yeah.
One track from the Code's second album, the Psychosexual album, and Blow the House Down. And two from the first 1993 Code release.
Right.
Oh, Chicken and But He Does Move.
Right. I can remember when we first recorded those, I had a recording studio in San Francisco, a small studio in the lower floor of my house. And we did all the recording. And I took it at that time. I was there was a sound lab at the lab was still on Divisadero in San Francisco. I think they're on 16th Street now. And they had a sound lab which had the first DigiDesign Pro Tools setups in it, Pro Deck and Pro Edit. So I spent a lot of time. You can hear it, especially with that second cut that you played, recording. You know, live players, you know, and then taking that, manipulating it, digitally editing it, whipping things around and putting them together in different ways. That was the first time I'd ever really, really spent serious time with digital production techniques. So it was really, really cool. Really cool.
Other than the potential of the studio and the technology, what were the influences behind what you were putting together at the time?
Well, I mean, for me, I was, especially on that disc you can hear, I was heavily influenced by Zappa, who I loved for years and years, and Beefheart, and also influenced by what was going on here with the improv core scene and the improvised music. I mean, it was a really fantastic time in the Bay Area for live, you know, avant-garde and stuff that was on the edge. I mean, you know, everyone was playing, you know, the Splatter Trio was around. I had my band Scatter, and then it was the Code that was playing, and Gino was doing his thing, and the Clubfoot Orchestra was around, and we had those series down at Olive Oils. I mean, it was a really vibrant scene. And what was funny is when that disc was, I remember I made 40 cassettes. I finished the recording, you know, Total Labor of Love, you know, put it together and sent out 40 cassettes. And I got two replies back. One just made me ecstatic. It was from Michael Dorf at the Knitting Factory in New York. And he was driving in his car. I don't know if that's possible. I may be forgetting it wrong. Could you be driving on the phone in your car, talking on the phone in your car in 94?
I don't know.
All I know is he told me, I listened to it. It's the best thing that I've heard in a long time. I really want to put it out. It's, you know, blah, blah. I was like, this is amazing. And then the other offer was from a small record label in Chicago. Rubin. Paul Rubin. Who ran Fott Records.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear back from the Knitting Factory people. It was like, it was great. And then like 3 weeks, 4 weeks went by. And then I got a one-page contract, which was basically, we'll own the music in perpetuity, you know. And I think, you know, it was even at that time, their deals were actually like, I actually paid in a little money or something like that compared to Fott, which was a small label. You remember, this was back in the day when there were all these indie labels doing CD distribution and, you know, putting out really cool stuff. So it was Steve Rubin from Fott Records, actually, not Paul Rubin. Paul Rubin is P.B. Hummel, who went to CalArts, so I get confused. But that was interesting. So I remember serious conversations with my father. I remember sitting around, should I go and put it out on Knitting Factory? You know, all my friends are putting out discs in the Knitting Factory. And then on the other side, here's this small label where they'll actually pay me a little bit of money for the master and give me copies of the disc. And I actually went with Fott at that, mm-hmm. that point to put it out. But it was pretty exciting to get that call, you know, I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
Baby, you're beautiful.
We'll make you a star.
Yeah, that's how it felt. I was like, you know, because especially, you know, I really, the music scene in San Francisco, these were really, you know, this was my scene in terms of players and connection and recording, just everything. And I remember thinking, it's like, I don't want to go to New York. I mean, why would I want to go to New York? I never wanted to go. Mm-hmm. I think I just never wanted to go anywhere in my life anyway, but I end up going. But I didn't want to go to New York, you know, to like make it as a, you know, or do that. So it was kind of exciting to get the offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One exciting thing about that time to me was that there were people interested in doing this music, but in bands.
Yes.
You know, like The Code or Splatter Trio or
Pluto.
The Molecules.
The Molecules. Ron,
Pluto.
who's still living in New York and putting out, you know, he puts out records with Pac and tours around. I mean, yeah, still doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of great groups around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's move into another direction
realm
of Steve Horowitz's music.
So 96, we decide to move to Europe. So, like a crazy man, I pack up my Mac 2 CI with my sample cell card and my Pro Tools card in it and, like, ship all that stuff with me. We're moving maybe for a year, right? So I've mm-hmm. got my computer so I can do I don't know. So I get there and I don't have a band. So I set it up and I do the virtual Code record. So I had before I left, I had the recordings and the multi-track versions of my group. I took that stuff, I manipulated it, I edited it, I took stuff off of different recordings, and I put together the virtual Code and made this little ditty.
All right.
As you listen to this recording, you will experience a wonderful feeling of relaxation. Ready? In. Out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out. Now return your head to its normal position.
Thoughts.
In. Out. In. your mind of all thought. Clear 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 your mind of all thought.
Why does my mind feel empty now, Steve?
I feel at peace, actually. I'm really happy to be here with you tonight, Dirk.
It's exquisite. Who was that?
So that's what you do when you move to Holland and you've got your whole computer rig in your room and you're kind of lonely and you don't know a lot of people. You record an album by yourself and you include Dr. Weil and Frank Zappa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, it's pretty much, the drummer on that is Dave Ravelli, who was a drummer I played with a lot in the Bay Area. He lives up in Seattle now. And you know, that I took the sounds of my friends and brought them with me and put it together.
And according to the little blurb here on the back, this audio comic book features virtual appearances by, and it includes Tiny Tim, Yogi Bear, Lenny Bruce, Lightnin' Hopkins, as well as your friends, Dave Ravelli, Dan Plonzi, Nick Phelps, Spike Jones, your good friend Spike Jones.
Good friend of mine, yeah.
Fred Frith, Henry Kaiser, Monty Python.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of those people don't even know I sampled them for this disc. It's definitely a Negative Land experience. You know, Chris Grieg's a friend of mine from Negative Land.
Uh-huh.
And after their whole U2 experience and the mm-hmm. book that they put out, you know, the sampling debacle, and I had that book and I was reading through it, and in the back it says, Samples of the Code. And I called up Chris, and I'm like, you didn't ask to sample me. And he's like, yeah, we've been through a big lawsuit on that, man. You know? He's like, I just forgot. So anyway, it's all in beautiful homage. And
yes.
You know.
And this album's called The Secret Code of Ethics. Can people still get your CDs?
Absolutely. You know, if you, first of all, the wonderful thing about the new digital age is that for the first time ever, my entire back catalog is available on iTunes.
Mm.
It's available on Amazon and probably 50 other digital networks. I work with BFM Digital, my mm-hmm. distributor. They shoot it out to all the services. And that's really the upside of what's happened with digital rights and what's happening with MP3s and just everything, is that, you know, I was able to really spend the last 3 years putting out, you know, an incredible, you know, not just the discs that were already there, but just my entire back catalog is available. You can go to my website, which is just www.thecodeinternational.com. See, we went from the code to the code international to the code ensemble, you know, very sneaky. But all of those CDs are available, so, you know, on those services or through, you know, the front page of the website. And the most incredible thing happened the other day is that I went into Amoeba and met with Mark Weinstein. And now you can actually go to Amoeba in San Francisco and actually hold CDs in your hand and actually buy them from Amoeba, which is just incredible. Real stuff that you could actually hold. So whether you need the digital stuff or whether you need the real stuff, it's all available now, which is to me very, very exciting.
Yeah.
You know, first time ever, really.
Yeah. In an earlier age, this stuff would have been available for a while and then disappeared.
Then it disappeared, went off the show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, Fought was a small label, you know, and, you know, stuff would come out. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. A shift, a musical shift.
Yes.
Steve Horowitz has a classical composer?
Wow, hard to believe. So, before I left the Bay Area, I had done a recording with the Sonus Imaginorum of my first string quartet, which is what you'll hear first, funnily enough. I don't know if we'll play the whole thing, because altogether it's about 16, 17 minutes, but we'll segue it into my second string quartet, which was recorded by the Flux Quartet several years later in New York City, and I thought that would be a good transition, because, you know, all the time I was here and studying at CalArts, and I was always writing chamber music and getting performances. So this will kind of, you know, give you a taste of that.
Yeah. If you've just tuned in recently, that's the voice of Steve Horowitz, my guest tonight in the Here and Now. I'm Dirk Richardson, and we are exploring 15 years of the music of Steve Horowitz and welcoming him back to the Bay Area.
It was the meditative trance that you got into from the piece before.
Weil.
Dr. Weil.
Yeah. Steve Horowitz here on KPFA. Thank you.
Thank you.
String Quartets, the first and second string quartets by my guest Steve Horowitz. The string quartet number one, Remote Control, played by the Sonus Imaginorum Quartet. And Pakua, string quartet number two, performed by the Flux Quartet.
Yeah, yeah. It's for the Sonus Imaginorum, it was Anna Pressler on violin and Phyllis Kamen on violin, Kurt Rohde playing viola, and Leighton Fong on cello.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Flux, that's Tom Chu on violin and Conrad Harris also on violin, Max Mandel on violin, and Dave Egger on cello. The inimitable Dave Egger on cello. And what we did there, which was clever, is that the first piece, Remote Control, you're flipping channels. It was like TV. So there were 11 short pieces for string quartet, and I think I had a thing I was going to write one a day or something like that. And there was a pizzicato section, and then I wanted to write 11 string quartets all based on these little pieces. And then when I was done at the end of my life, I'd have a volume of 11 string quartets, and then people would look at the first one and be like, it's like a sampler for the rest of them. It was like the sampler for the string quartets that were. So I'm up to two. But the second one is built on off the pizzicato,
mm-hmm.
from the first one. So we played up to that point and then switched over to the second string quartet. So
Seamless.
And one was recorded here in the Bay Area, and mm-hmm. one was recorded in New York City not that many years ago.
Seamless cross-country collaboration.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Steve Horowitz in the studio here at KPFA, and let me take care of a little bit of business before we shift directions again with Steve's music. You are tuned to 94.1 FM KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 FM KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 FM KFCF in Fresno, and online, kpfa.org.
The following candidate statements belong to the author of the statement only.
My name is Tracy Rosenberg. I hope you'll vote for me and my colleagues from Independence Fork Community Radio. Find out more about us at voteindieradio.org. In 11 years of involvement with KPFA, I've been on the payroll, off the payroll, and in the streets. As the director of Media Alliance, I'm running for the board again because I care about the strength of independent media. Together, we can make KPFA what the world desperately needs, community media that matters.
I'm Margie Wilkinson, running for local station board with Save KPFA. I was a union activist at UC Berkeley for 40 years and have been a KPFA listener for a long time. Right now, the survival of KPFA is at stake. The way forward is to broaden our reach, coming up with creative new ideas. My experience has taught me to work in difficult situations with respect, civility, and a focus on building consensus. Please vote for me, Margie Wilkinson, and others on the Save KPFA slate.
And if you are a voting member of the KPFA community, you have your ballot in hand. It's time for you to listen to the candidates and fill out your ballot and return it to KPFA. If you have any questions, you can go to PacificaElection2010.org, or you can call 510-332-7181. One for the information about the upcoming local station board election. And back here in the studio with Steve Horowitz, we've been in San Francisco, and New York.
We haven't made it to the Netherlands yet. We actually cut to New York for musical reasons, but not for travel or, mm-hmm. or sequential timeline reasons. It's sort of like a Quentin Tarantino film, right? We can jump around
That's a little bit.
People will understand.
So where are we going now?
So, you know, back in the day, there was a project that Dan and I had together called the Mousetrap Quartet. And we played around. We didn't do any recording, but we played with people like Laura Carmichael and Dave Ravelli. So I, in 96, moved to the Netherlands. And for some strange reason, was able to get a little bit of grant money to put together a tour for Dan and Dave to come over. And we played with so it was Dan Plante on saxophone, Dave Ravelli playing drums, and Peter van Bergen, Peter on saxophone, Dutch player, fantastic player. We also played with Michael Moore, who plays with, you know, Han Bennick and you know, improvised music scene in the Netherlands. And we did two tours, actually, one in 99 and one in 2000. And we'll hear something from both of them. We'll start out from the one from 99, which is a tune by Dan, which I think, you know, people have probably been listening and they've been saying, well, that's great, Steve, but why are you doing a Coltrane concert? What do you know about jazz? Although I did go to Berkeley High, okay, so that should just say it all. But I'll you know, Phil Hardiman. But I'll tone it back and prove it. This is a tune by Dan, a really beautiful tune called "She Walks Well in the Dark," and it's a trio piece with Dan on saxophone, Dan Plonzi, Dave Ravelli on drums, myself on fretless electric bass, and this is a studio recording done in Amsterdam. So after I'd lived there for a while when these guys came over, and then. Then we can segue into a piece afterwards, which was a Sun Ra tribute album and tour that we did in the Netherlands, with Joost Bouws also on trombone with a bigger band. That is maybe some hint of the jazz to come for the concert of Coltrane's music.
Mousetrap on KPFA. Thank you. now we can see that there is connection between what you do in jazz and what you'll be doing 2 weeks from tonight.
Yes,
at the
Lake
Shore Gallery.
There is.
In tribute to John Coltrane.
I told you I wouldn't let you down, Dirk.
Yeah, Steve, you came through.
There was a method to the madness.
Yeah. That was gorgeous.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think it's a really beautiful, haunting piece, and it's one of my favorite pieces that Dan's written, actually,
yeah.
that I've had the honor, I feel honored to have played on it, actually.
So he came over and visited you in Holland a couple of times.
Yeah. We did, like I said, we did two tours in 99 and 2000. And the second tour was really, really memorable because we played the BIM House.
Mm.
We did a project called Mousetrap Plays Sun Ra, similar maybe in some ways to what we're doing with the Coltrane Train tribute. And that was recorded for the radio, for live broadcast for Radio 4 in Holland. And so we had a great recording. We're able to release it. And that's all available as a three-disc set. If you go to Amoeba, you can actually hold it in your hand. But all three discs, there's a studio disc and a live disc from the 99 tour, and then the live show from the BIM House on the 2000 tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available online as well, like I said.
Yeah. And Dan Ponzi will be with you.
Yes.
2 weeks from tonight.
He's with
part
us
of this.
Now.
Yes, he is. And tribute to John Coltrane.
Tribute to John Coltrane on his actual birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On his actual birthday. And it's taking place 2 weeks from tonight at the Luggage Store Gallery. And the Luggage Store Gallery is at 1007. That's 1007 Market Street in San Francisco, right around the corner from 6th Street on Market. Right around the corner from that little Vietnamese hole-in-the-wall Toulon.
Good.
Which I haven't been to for quite a while. But show starts at 8. It features Dan Ponzi, Steve Horowitz, Vinnie Golia, Jim Bovey, and some readings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, let's give away a pair of tickets to someone who, instead of staying home listening to the radio on KPFA Thursday night, 2 weeks from tonight, would like to go to the Luggage Store Gallery. But you have to answer a question.
Yes.
And before we'll give you this pair of tickets, you need to call 510-848-4425 and answer the question.
What is John Coltrane's birthday? On what day was he born? Was that English? I don't even know if that was English. What are John Coltrane's birthday? That's what I'd like to say.
It were the day he was born.
It was the day But you know what we're saying is what is the day he was born, the actual date
of
his birth.
The month and day.
Yeah.
And you can give me a call at 510.
Extra bonus if you give the year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I know. I think I know.
510-848-4425. That's 510-848-4425. The first person to tell us the date of John Coltrane's birth, the month and the day, for a pair of tickets to see the John, you've got me tongue-tied now, Steve, the John Coltrane tribute show 2 weeks from tonight at the Luggage Store Gallery in San Francisco. While we listen to what?
Oh, we're going to listen to, give me that cut number.
Space Dust.
Oh, yes, Space Dust, which is a tune I wrote in homage to Sun Ra. That's all I know. That's what it says.
And here it is on KPFA.
Thank you very much. That was a composition by Dan Ponzi. It's called Dishpan 12. And Dan will explain later to you about the concept of the Dishpan series. Now we're going to try a piece called Space Dust.
Absolutely. So you're listening to Dan Plonzi and Jim Bovey, Peter Van Berchen, Jim Meneses, Joost Baus. Yeah.
Nice.
Joost on trombone.
Nice.
Yeah. Sun Ra fanatic. You know, has a group in Holland called the Plutones. It's just totally dedicated to Sun Ra.
Hey, thanks for all your calls about the upcoming John Coltrane tribute concert.
We tried to
from tonight.
Fool you.
Nah, but the way we didn't get away with it.
No, just people seeing knew. If anyone was paying attention.
John Coltrane's birthday, September 23rd, the night of the concert, 2 weeks from tonight. If you want more information, you can check out the Luggage Store Gallery online. It's at 1007 Market Street in San Francisco. 2 weeks from tonight, Steve Horowitz, Dan Plonzi, and others, including, of course, I put that piece of paper away already. Greetings by Craig Clevenger and D. Scott Miller.
Yes.
So, in New York, you've had quite a successful career composing what we could call commercial music.
Sure, you know, but we don't have to, you know, we don't have to get, you know, we don't have to put the boundaries up or the dividing lines, you know. Music is music, whether you watch it or listen to it while you watch it. Something like that? I don't know. I was trying to wax poetical. But yes, you know, we moved back from Holland to New York in 2000, you know, just before the changeover so that the planes didn't fall out of the sky because of the 2K bug. And when I was there, my cousin Dave said, "Oh, you got to meet my crazy friend Morgan." And at that point, Morgan was wandering around the East Village with a business plan in his back pocket for a show he wanted to do called I Bet You Will, which was going to be the first web. Now, you got to remember, this is the height of the dot-com boom, so this is when the dot-com was going to take over television. So it was going to be the first streaming, you know, sort of like what will people do for money TV show, and then he wanted to flip it from, you know, the web to television, which he actually did. So he did, we did 40 episodes or something like that for the online, and then it got sold to MTV, and we did another 50 episodes that way. And then he came up with the idea. He's like, "Oh, you know, I'm working on this movie, Supersize Me." I'm like, "Okay." And the rest is history.
So you wrote the music?
I did the original score for Supersize Me, yeah. That's when Morgan was living in his office, you know, sleeping on a hammock. It really was a classic, you know, American tale of, you know, went to Sundance, had no idea. I mean, here's a guy, you know, guy gets crazy idea, guy puts it together with his friends, guy makes a movie, guy becomes famous, you know, typical rags to riches story. And, you know, I was at Sundance for it, and it was pretty wild to see this whole machine kind of whip up from the ground up.
Yeah.
And the feeding frenzy, you know, behind it.
Yeah. Well, we should listen to some of the music that you wrote for it.
Right.
It is available in this, what is it, a 5-CD set?
No, no one can buy that. See, it says on the back, it says, not for sale at any price.
Except for the
stuff you're about to hear. If you go up on iTunes or any of the digital services we were talking about before, just go to my website to find them. The Super Size Me soundtrack is for sale on iTunes, as well as the theme song from Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden, which I did the title song for that that film.
Since this music was produced by Fluffy Schwartz, who dat?
Yeah, actually, that's good timing on that question. At the time I first met Morgan, I was also running the audio department of Nickelodeon Digital, which was Nick Online and Nick.com and NickJr.com. And I figured that since I had a gig at like the premier kids, you know, network, probably wasn't a good idea to use my own name on a show like I Bet You Will, where it was like, you know, will you eat, you know, buttered hairballs, you know, and do like really. Also, you know, there's. So I took on a nom de plume pseudonym. And I was lazy, but it worked out because I took my, you know, your stripper name, right? You take your mother's maiden name and your first family pet. So Schwartz and Fluffy. So Fluffy Schwartz. Fluffy.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's how I became Fluffy Schwartz. The funny thing is that there are a bunch of people around New York City, especially Manhattan, who don't know me as anything but Fluffy. So if you're sitting with a group of people who only know you as Steve, and someone passes and go, "Hey, Fluff, how's it going?" They're all like, "Fluff, what is he talking about? What are they calling you Fluff for?" So yeah, I'm Fluffy.
All right. Well, let's supersize it.
Perfect.
Here on KPFA.
Always.
One, two, three.
Where in the world is Osama bin Laden? Where in the world has that good old boy been hiding? Tell me if you think you know, 'cause that's where I got to go. It's the start of a newfangled American vacation. Register all your next of kin with the United Nations. Freedom is not free, so come on along with me. Where in the world? Where in the world? People all across the land, come along and lend a helping hand. Brother, can't you hear freedom's call? United we stand and divided we fall. Tell me if you know where that their good old boy been hiding. Let's all climb in our SUVs. $4 a gallon, brother, that just can't be. Where in the world? Where in the world? Where in the world?
Where in the world is Osama bin Laden?
If only we knew. You know, the funny thing about it, it was really, really great to work on these projects, especially Supersize Me, which I think, you know, I think Morgan's really, really helped to define kind of a new style of documentary filmmaking. You know, a lot of people kind of pigeonhole him in the Michael Moore, you know, style, but I really think he's got his own style, and he takes a lot of guff, you know, from the documentary community that thinks it's not serious enough and mm-hmm. too poppy, and from the pop side, which think it's not poppy enough, and it was interesting. I mean, going to the Academy Awards, I mean, you know, you could see. I mean, they chose a wonderful film, which is Born into Brothels, and that's the one chance the Academy really has to say we don't just make Hollywood film. You know, we validate serious things, and I think that they felt either Supersize Me wasn't serious enough or whatever, but it was a little deflating when it didn't win. You know, I had total delusions of grandeur, I think that's what they call it, because, you know, Bernard Herrmann, who, for those of you who don't know, fantastic, amazing film composer, probably one of the greatest American film composers, first film he worked on was Citizen Kane. So he was with CBS Radio Orchestra, worked with Wells, did Citizen Kane. It won the Academy Award that year. And I'm like, well, this is the first feature I've worked on, and it's up for an Academy Award this year. This is like lightning in a bottle twice. Unfortunately, that's not the way it went down, but it was great projects to work on. Fun music and, you know.
Yeah. So we heard part of the Supersize Me suite.
We heard it's part of the Supersize Me suite. And in fact, what we didn't listen to, which people can go online and get, is the Supersize Me Collector's Remix, which has clips from the movie in it. And then we heard Where in the World is Osama bin Laden, the title track from the film, which was performed by Folkfoot, which is Bill Kelly and Michael Parrish. Fantastic, amazing folk duo in New York. These guys are unbelievable. You can get their discs. Just go, Google Folkfoot. Or Bill Kelly, or Michael Parrish, either one of those guys. And they have an amazing disc out called Dos Hombres, which is fantastic. They're a great duo. Tour around a lot, go to Europe. And I was really fortunate. They were like, yeah, let's go in the studio and knock this out. I think what happened was, I was working on the music for the film, and then Morgan, I just got inspired. I'm like, I'm going to write a title cut. And we did it really, it was really quick. I think we were in the studio for like 4 hours and we knocked it out and we did the song, and then they decided to use it in the film. And I think I was pretty happy with the mix, but I was like, maybe it's a rough mix, maybe it's not. And then it was used, it was too late. You know, like 3 months later, it's like, oh, it's in there. I'm like, it is? Great. Yeah.
And now we're going to listen to some music by the Code Ensemble.
Yes. Another film composer, great film composer, I like great American film composers, is David Shire. Mm-hmm. He wrote the music for a movie some of you may remember called The Taking of Pelham 123. So here I am in New York, and I'm on the subways all the time, and I go into a little CD shop, and I pick up the CD with the music from The Taking of Pelham 123, and I'm just like, it's amazing. I love it. And it's not usual for me to, you know, I really just was so bonded to that music that I did a rearrangement of the title theme for my band, for a small ensemble, and we were playing it in clubs. We played at the Knitting Factory, places like that. And then I started, for some reason, doing like a theme and variations, writing a big score for my large ensemble, the Code Ensemble, adding different sections. And then I started to think, well, if I'm going to do this, maybe I'm remixing the music in a way and reinterpreting it. Maybe it'd be good to have a filmmaker reinterpret the film. So Jane Brill, who's an amazing filmmaker in New York City, we started working on this project together. We did a test run of it at this place called the Williamsburg Arts Nexus. And I recorded some of it. And I sent it. I had been in Los Angeles for the Academy Award thing, so I had actually met with David's agent, so I knew his agent. So I sent a real fanboy letter to his agent, and I'm like, I would love you just to play this recording for David. Maybe he could just endorse it, you know. And I was thinking of those John Zorn, Ennio Morricone records, where he's like, John Zorn, great composer, you know. So I thought maybe he'd write a quote, you know, for something he might like it. So I thought he was in LA, but he actually lived in Nyack. I get this email from him. I really loved it, and what can I do to be involved? And I'm like, so this is like one of my heroes, you know? Like, I love what you, it was absolutely fantastic. And David was amazing. He came out when we did the shows at the Kitchen. When we did the shows, we just did a 2-night run at Red Cat in January, where we sold the place out. David came. We did Pelham plus a bunch of other pieces. David came and did the pre-concert discussion, flew out to LA for a pre-concert discussion. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. He's an American treasure. So this score of mine is totally—it's based on his music and reinterpreted, and all about the New York subways and all about the film. And to tell you the truth, I heard the music and fell in love with it before I even saw the movie. And then after seeing the movie, it was a big plus.
Well, let's listen to it.
Okay, enough of my yapping.
Identify yourself, please. haystack.
There are more stars in the heavens than there are humans on Earth. Since biblical times, man has witnessed and recorded strange manifestations in the sky. Through telescopes, men of science constantly search the infinitesimal corners of our solar system, seeking new discoveries, hoping to better understand the laws of the universe. Today, from the skies of California, the fields of Kansas, the rice paddies of the Orient, the air lanes of the world, come persistent reports of UFOs. Unidentified flying objects, which we have come to know as flying saucers. Since biblical times, man has witnessed and recorded strange manifestations in the sky and speculated on the possibilities of visitors from another world.
So you might have noticed that, you know, I like to, you know, that was Morgan doing the announcer for Invasion from the Chicken Planet. So we heard the title theme from Pelham and then the title theme from Invasion from the Chicken Planet and the opening of it. Both of these are, so Pelham plays with a film behind it. Chicken Planet has three giant screens and actors and, you know, really, really fun to do. So these are sort of what's become of the code. We've become the code ensemble and doing these very large-scale pieces.
So who else is involved in the piece, the Invasion from the Chicken Planet? Whose piece is that?
Well, that's I wrote it.
Uh-huh.
It's actually for a film that maybe perhaps one day could be made or could possibly exist. and it does exist. Actually, Zig Grahn, who's a videographer in L.A., did a giant three-screen projection that's completely tied to the music and really wonderfully. He's an amazing filmmaker. But the film, in both these cases, the film came after the music, which is very unusual. Usually the film comes and then you get tortured as a composer to make the music. So I had the opportunity to actually torture filmmakers to have them actually produce images and make music that would, or visuals and film that would go with my music. So, both of these are very large scale projects. There's tons of musicians, you know, Andy Barbera is playing guitar. I've got two guitar players, David Nadal, and you've got Michael Evans and the amazing Devin Maxwell conducting and playing percussion. And, I actually recorded both of these albums at the same time in New York City. At the same time, I was doing a ton of other things. And if I ever try to do that again, can you tell me not to do it? Because I really almost put myself in the hospital trying to do that.
We'll slow you down.
It was really crazy. But, you know, people can find these again. They're at Amoeba. They're online. You can go to my website, thecodeinternational.com. You can go to iTunes and just Google my name, Steve Horowitz, and you'll find all this stuff, and you can hear more than just a clip and a snippet. I mean, we've got a marathon going on here.
Yes.
We're just touching the surface.
So, Synclavier, however you...
Disclavier. Yeah.
Yes.
I had a chance to work with the Disclavier, which is basically the world's most elegant MIDI controller. Mm-hmm. It's a MIDI grand piano, and it allows... composers like me to sit and write music by myself. I'm not a super pianist. You know, I can get around on a piano, but and I hook my laptop up to it, and I'm able to go in and really create. I wrote these pieces in a pretty bad period of my life, actually, when I was pretty sick, and it's over a 2-year period, and it was really nice to get away from large ensemble pieces and to go down to just me and a piano in a room. And take as much time as I needed to sort of refine these pieces. And the Disclavier is great because you can input something and then manipulate it a little bit on the computer. And then it's, I didn't think it would be that big of a difference to sit in a room, but it's different. You know, if you listen to a sample coming out of a speaker, it's a completely different ball of wax to sit there, write a bit, and then be in the room with a piano as it's playing. It made me want to have an entire robotic orchestra, winds and strings, and if that could happen, I probably wouldn't have to talk to people for a pretty long period of time, actually. But so that's what these pieces are. This is the latest disc I have out of Disclavier pieces. There's some soloists on it. Dave Egger playing cello, Ned McGowan playing contrabass flute. I don't know if we'll have time to hear that, but at least you'll get a snippet of it and a feeling of it, and then, you know, go out and explore it more.
Here it is. Thank you. I wish we could hear more of this, Steve.
I know. You know, I just want to thank you for taking this time to explore the inner recesses of the musical mind of
Steve Horowitz.
Steve Horowitz. I mean, thank you so much.
We're just getting barely inside there.
You know, there's so much more to delve into. Yeah. It's so rich. But thank you. I mean, to take this much time is wonderful, and I really appreciate it, and it's been great.
And this has been called Connecticut Nocturne, Moon Over Mudge Road. No.
Powder to the Light. And the name of the CD is Stations of the Breath.
Stations of the Breath.
By yours truly.
And you can find out more at thecodeinternational.com.
Yep. And hopefully we'll see some people at the show on the 23rd.
The 23rd at the Ludwig Store Gallery in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Perfect timing.